6:14, now lights on the Crescent City Connection, spectacularly glittering purple and orange, I guess for Halloween. Highs of 86 today, 40% chance for showers, 60% tomorrow, 40% on Saturday, and 20% on Sunday. Then which is odd because the highs on Sunday are 80, but then they say a cold front arrives and the highs are 86. But I guess the humidity comes down and then we're in the lower 80s. Andy Smith joins us now, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, and I'm guessing we always talk about the weather differences. I'm guessing you guys are having a little bit different weather in New Hampshire?
A little bit different. Currently a balmy 46 going up to about 70 today, so it's a nice fall day. The leaves have turned nicely orange in a lot of places, so it's a pretty day.
Good for y'all.
Come on up.
Son of a gun. Yeah, I'd like to do that. So I guess after the vice presidential debate, a big swing in the election has changed completely, right? Presidential election?
Absolutely. The thing is just the same as it was before the debate.
Yeah, that's what I figured. You know, really,
yeah,
go ahead.
I say, but the press had a good week or two telling us how important that debate is going to be and how it likely can change the election because they have to sell advertising.
Mm. You hate to take that approach to it, but in a way, it's kind of right. Who's voting already in different states?
A lot of different states have voting. I think North Carolina actually is going to be coming up pretty soon. That'll be interesting to see what happens given the flooding they had in western North Carolina. I think Oregon's already got its going. I think Ohio's are sent out. So there are a lot of states. I haven't kept up with the exact number of states that are voting already. But, you know, to me, it's kind of – I've never been a big fan of this of the early voting. I understand it. If you're absentee and you're going to be out of the office. Mm-hmm. But how hard is it to go and vote?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it that the United States, among pretty much all Western countries, has this long, long, long period of voting and then another week or so after the election's over to figure out – which votes we count and don't count because of mail stamps and all that sort of mm-hmm. stuff, where France had their elections this summer and they had the results up that night. I don't know.
It seems like
I'm frustrated.
It seems like I would say somewhat recent development, or at least if you were to put this on a chart, it seems like the early voting, that's something that didn't happen 20 years ago, did it?
It started really a little bit more than 20 years ago when the state of Oregon, in order to boost turnout, said, well, let's make it easier for people to vote. They can vote by mail.
Mm-hmm.
Then everybody got mailed their ballots in Oregon, and everybody can vote by mail in Oregon. Really didn't do much to turnout, maybe bumped it up a little bit, went down a little bit some years. But it did change this idea that there's an election day and a campaign kind of builds to the election day, and people are going to get additional information all the way up to election day. Now it kind of presumes that a whole lot of the electorate's got their minds made up way in advance, and the campaigns like it because they call it banking those votes, so they don't have to go after those people on election day and try to get them to show up. They can concentrate their efforts on just those people who didn't show up. So this is something that's more for the benefit of the political campaigns than the electorate, in my view.
Although inconvenient, is there any evidence that it changes the accuracy of the results? Might change the accuracy of polling, or it might change, I guess, maybe campaign strategy. But has there ever been any evidence of real chicanery going on here?
Not really. You know, there's always some bits of fraud in elections, but because there's so many people and so many opportunities, but just nothing that rises to the point where it makes a difference in the outcomes. I guess the only one that I've seen recently where they had to redo the elections was in North Carolina. I think it was their CD9 back in 2016. They had to go and redo the election over because both sides, frankly, were harvesting votes in nursing homes. But other than those kind of rare occasions like that, it doesn't make much difference in the election. I mean, we got several hundreds of millions of people voting, and the few votes that might be shifted because of election gimmicks are pretty small in comparison to the total number of votes.
How important is North Carolina in this election? And I'll get to why I'm asking in a second.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more important. It was a close race. Obama won it twice. It's been seen as a battleground state. We thought this year that it was looking like it was leaning pretty heavily to the Republicans until they had that little problem with the governor at the top. And it's drifting back towards the Democratic column, but it's one of many states that's up in the air.
The reason I ask is that, to me, from what I've seen, Helene is North Carolina's Katrina. And I'm just trying to figure where our heads were at after Katrina and how that would have affected voting in a presidential race. I don't think it was an election year. No, it was 2005, so it was not an election year. But that would have been the last thing on anybody's mind. And I don't know about people that are gone or that – I don't know if there's going to be a diaspora like there was here after Katrina for a while or not. I don't know. We'll take a break and you can reflect on that when we come back. And I just think it's interesting that – Helene, if it comes down to North Carolina and Helene could be the difference maker, that's something that nobody saw coming. While we thought this was going to be Trump-Biden for a long, long time, then it changed, then Helene comes in, and maybe that could change it even more. 620 more when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 625, back with Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. So going back to what I was saying, you know, we thought for a long time that it was going to be Biden-Trump, Biden-Trump, Biden-Trump. Then all of a sudden, hey, it's not. It's Biden-Harris. Then all of a sudden, Hurricane Helene devastates North Carolina, which I think is equivalent to Katrina hitting us. And I'm just wondering how that could change not just things in North Carolina, but how that could change the whole presidential election. Thoughts?
Well, a couple things. First off, the mechanics of the election. I imagine they'll be able to take care of that. They've got enough time between now and the election to set up some temporary places to vote. It's going to obviously be harder for people to get to some of those places with road closures and so forth. But, you know, most polling places tend to be fairly small geographically. And then, you know, people are going to be busy cleaning up for a long time. There's going to be a lot of construction, a lot of that going on, and that's voting's probably not highest on their mind. But that said, voting doesn't generally take that long. It may be something that people can do as a break. If turnout is depressed in that area, I think that it likely will hurt Democrats. Asheville in particular, which got hit the hardest, I think, of the major cities out there, is pretty heavily a Democratic college town. And that could hurt Democrats across the state, the difference, I think, between there and in New Orleans is that western North Carolina is very, very rural outside of Asheville, very mountainous and hilly, and the people that live there are kind of used to dealing with things themselves. You get a bad snowstorms up there in the winter, how you get around in those mountains with snow. You do get floods, not like these, obviously, but you've had floods before. So I think the people there will be able to get around it and be able to do okay. The college kids, and they're the ones who might leave for a while.
So do you think in any way, given you got to balance a lot of things here, you got to balance what happens in North Carolina. And all I'm going to is the mindset of people I know here. And I don't know if it's, again, you're talking about an entire state as opposed to an area in Louisiana. It was just New Orleans. I don't know how much of North Carolina is devastated. But the mindset of how concerned are you about voting? Plus, you got to factor in the importance of North Carolina as well as other states. So I'm just wondering, does this matter at all or not, Helene, when it comes to turning the presidential election?
I don't know. I think the thing that happened, I think, politically with Katrina was the perception that the Bush administration just wasn't doing much about it. Mm-hmm. And that politically hurt the Bush administration, but as you mentioned, it wasn't during an election year. Here, right at the election, you know, the Biden administration is going through, and I think most administrations have learned from Katrina that the appearance of doing something is really important, and sending the troops into the mountains and so forth to help out is probably going to mitigate any potential blowback that there would be against the administration. I think it's too early to say. My sense is it's not going to make that much difference. You got to remember, it's a rural area. It's not like New Orleans where you got hit in a big urban area. And you know, this is a rural place where things will get cleaned up. It's just not going to have as much of that physical damage that you saw in New Orleans.
And from the political, I guess the perception part of it. There's nobody stranded. There's nobody in the Superdome. There's none of that kind of stuff right. going on, and people in the streets begging for water. And not that it's not bad. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, and it's just despite the devastation there and kind of the isolation, it's probably easier to get supplies in an area like that mm-hmm. than it is in the city of New Orleans, where you had just a lot of water that sat there with nowhere to go. The water's already down in North Carolina because those floods in mountains, floods come up quick and then they go down pretty quick as well. So I don't think there's going to be that long-term problem.
So if you had to say right now, the election is going to turn on what?
It's going to turn on turnout. Who can get their people to the polls? That's going to make the difference. And because it's not a matter of convincing people that their candidate's the best candidate, it's a matter of getting your people to show up.
You're telling me nobody's changing their mind? I'm just kidding.
Not much.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate your time, as
good
always.
To talk to you.
Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Mike Strain joins us as we come back. Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Bunch of stuff to talk with him about, and we always learn something. Then after that, we'll talk to Pat Connick, state senator, about Louisiana's new laws on labeling foreign seafood. Are they being followed? A lot coming up. Stay with us right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we'll go to Dave Cohen. 6:43, 17 before 7 Thursday morning. That's when we talked to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. We learn something every time we talk to Mike. How you doing, Dr. Strain?
Man, I am doing great. How are you doing, Tommy?
I am doing okay. Let's talk about the port strike and how that could affect things.
Well, if you look at the port strikes, about half of the volume of goods that are imported and exported from the United States go through the ports and in containers. And if you look, you know, here, you know, in the port of New Orleans, it's significant. We have about, it could have $12 to $20 million a day effect on our local economy. It's an average of 1,300 units per day, and that's a 20-foot container. Coffee, poultry that we export, consumer goods, imports and exports, about half of all monthly U.S. imports go through the East and the Gulf Coast, and about one-fifth of all jobs are directly or indirectly tied to international trade. So it's huge. We have 700 ILA members in the Port of New Orleans and the Port of Baton Rouge. And the things, when we've had issues with containers, if you remember back when COVID, such as spare parts, that was a big deal for us in agriculture, and we had spare part issues. For instance, at that time, we had difficulty getting the blades, the cutting blades, to go on for the machines to harvest our sugar cane. And now we're beginning sugar cane harvest. You know, such things as, you know, if you look at a lot of spare parts are made overseas for vehicles. At the time, it was chips that were necessary to go and replace those in trucks that controlled their environmental systems. And if the chip went out, the truck went down, and then the truck, you know, you didn't have that unit. And so it's going to hurt. We got to get ready for it. Hopefully they will resolve this, but this is a bad time. I mean, we're right now, you know, we're in at harvest and we're trying to ship everything. Now our elevators that load directly on ships, the majority of those grain elevators, those are still operational, but it's the containers, but it's also most of our poultry. It moves out in containers at the Port of New Orleans. And so this is not a good thing. And what happens is that right now, you know, offshore, you'll start having ships that are start backing up. So everything kind of grinds to a halt. And it's going to hurt us economically. But there are our second and tertiary effects that we're going to begin to feel.
Is this big enough, Mike, or could this get serious enough? And I don't mean to say something I shouldn't say here, but because it might not be accurate, but where a president would invoke Taft-Hartley or anything like that and force him back to work?
Well, they're talking about it. Right now, the president is urging the port officials basically to say, look, go ahead and y'all need to get on the stick and come to some agreement. But yes, absolutely, to say, look, y'all have to go ahead and go back to work. And we're going to negotiate, and they can do that. You know, that's like the 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and you get some solid negotiations. And because you can't just allow them to shut down. If you remember during the Reagan years, when all the air traffic controllers said we're going to walk out, we'll say, well, but you can't under your contracts. where we're going. Remember what Reagan did? He just fired them all. Yep. What he did, and they started all over again. And that, because the skies were snarled here, you know, under the Taft-Hartley Act, they need to come to the negotiating table. They need to keep working because, again, it's about the health of the nation. And right now, let me tell you something: things are tight out there economically. And when you start looking at all the different factors of our economy, the manufacturing factor sectors, the ag sectors, you know, just the average household, mom and pop, we don't need this right now. And here we are going into the holiday season, the Christmas season, and of course all the what we call it Walmart stuff is on those containers, as well as very vital components, because we're worldwide integrated now. And so, you know, you'll have those, well, look, let's just buy American. Well, you've got to have the ability to manufacture that and get it into the system. But it shows you our interdependence in worldwide economics.
Speak to, Mike, people panic buying stuff because, you know, people sometimes cause their own problems, right? So talk about that,
well,
if you
that,
will, please.
Yeah, panic buying. And, for instance, I was told yesterday that if you go to Costco or Sam's, you're not going to find any toilet paper. It's gone, right? People are buying things by the cases, yeah. You know. And so please don't panic buy, because that exacerbates the whole problem. And, look, you don't need to be going panic buying bread or milk or ground beef, because that's not going to be really affected here. That's going to be there. But everybody, just buy what you need. But the panic buying, again, further skews our delivery system. Our whole delivery system for goods is based on just the minimum amount needed to make it for the shortest time possible. So it's very streamlined. And when it happens, you throw a monkey wrench into that, and it really shuts the gears down, literally. So you have to have that mental picture. So please don't panic buy, because that will really make the whole system worse, and it will cause a great deal of issues. But then it goes back to show you that interdependence. You know, one time we had a huge facility. Georgia Pacific had a facility on the north side of Baton Rouge. They still make Brawny towels, but they used to make toilet paper and other products, and now they make Brawny towels. And so, again, it shows our interdependence with international trade.
And they make toilet paper in the United States, right, before people get freaked out about
that? Yes, they make toilet paper in the United States. We need to look at, you know, ways that we can make our manufacturing more efficient so that we can be more competitive than the foreign players, because the foreign players have to make it, then they have to ship it, and it's got to be handled multiple more times. And so we really need, I mean, we have a massive amount of pulp here, a massive amount to make these products. We need to utilize that versus shipping pulp. And one of the things we were talking with my counterparts in Georgia and South Carolina after the hurricane, you know, the hurricane damaged all that timber. They normally ship timber out by containers, you know, going overseas, and now they got all this down timber, no way to ship it out. And so that's another issue that, you know, we start looking at the greater and more long-term effects. And the thing about the timber that's down is due to the hurricane, you have a very short window, less than 6 weeks, to get it out, because the timber starts, it gets like a mold or a fungus on it, and then it has no value at all.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Mike Strain. We'll talk about some fun stuff when we come back. Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Got any questions or comments? 260-504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler talk and text line. I'll pass them along. 651 9 till 7. Traffic now, WWL. 6:55, 5 till 7, Thursday morning means we're talking to Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry Commissioner Dr. Mike Strain. Mike, it's Fire Prevention Week, and, man, it's a time of year where people are supposed to check, the smoke detectors, and then before you know it, it'll be cold, and people start using space heaters, so we may as well talk about all that.
Absolutely. And Fire Prevention Week, you know, it's really, really important, and now is the time. Change out the batteries in those smoke alarms and test them, you know. And if those smoke alarms are old, say 10 years or so old, you may consider go ahead and replacing them. So the newer smoke alarms have 10-year batteries, and they're basically, you know, like an LED light in it and a 10-year battery, and replace them. And really, you need to strategically place them. They need to be in every bedroom, outside each separate sleeping area in the hallway and also on every floor. Smoke alarms, CO2 alarms, they save your life. They really do. Because as you hear, you know, a lot of times when people die in a fire, it's because they never woke up with smoke inhalation. Also, you know, again, when you talk about generators and generator safety, that generator needs to be at least 3 feet away from your house or four, where the exhaust can get out. And with fire safety, as we get into headed towards holiday season, you know, you don't fry that turkey next to the house or under the porch. Because inevitably, what's going to happen? Flame over or flash over. And we need to start thinking about that. And, of course, you know, with space heaters, the biggest rule of space heater, you know, put it properly in a good place, but don't put any rugs over the cords. That's a big deal, especially extension cords. That is a big cause of fires. You know, and when cool weather comes, you have those space heaters, and the rugs over the electric cords, the extension cords, causes them to overheat and causes fire. So now is the time. And if you have any questions, you can always visit your local fire department. They are more than glad to help. A lot of the fire departments are having activities here in Abita Springs, Fire District 8. They had a huge activity for families and kids, and a lot of times, you know, they'll be giving away smoke detectors and other things. So now's the time. Check around the house. Check those smoke detectors. And look, it's better to put a new battery in now than 3 o'clock in the morning to hear that thing chirping and you don't have a battery. You know,
right.
That's nothing.
You're right.
Oh, my gosh. And you can't figure out which one it is. And if you have a smoke alarm that is hardwired, that battery goes out. It will not shut up until you put a new battery in it.
Mm-hmm. Mike, let's talk about, there's nothing I like more than driving around on a country road in a fall in Louisiana and seeing a sugarcane trucks. I don't know why, but
man, they're rolling.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about that.
Yeah, the sugarcane harvest is underway. You know, we got most of the plant cane in the ground because you cut that first cane and then you replant it. But we'll be firing up the mills, and we have just a small amount is harvested, and it's really rolling. We're about 6% harvested. And it's looking good. We're very fortunate. We've had some good weather, and that cane has recovered a lot from the hurricanes. And so it's beautiful. But give them a little extra room. Think about that. We got about $1.2 billion worth of cane to harvest, and hopefully we will be done now by early January. We used to have it done by December, but we got so much cane, it goes on a little bit longer. Give them a little extra time. Give them a little extra space. And, you know, we see those tractors and those harvesters, because they are rolling. And when the thing about sugarcane, every farmer has a quota they have to meet every day.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate your time and information. As always, Mike Strang, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. I remember, I think I was in Raceland coming home one Saturday evening. The sun was going down. The LSU game was on WWL. The weather had just turned cold. The sugarcane trucks were on the road, and you could smell it, and it was just fall in Louisiana, man. I'm looking forward to that. We'll come back, talk to Pat Connick, state senator, about Louisiana seafood labeling.